morning. It is time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. I want to start today's show with a couple of notes that probably should have covered during the talkback section earlier, but man, we had so much going on, there just wasn't time. We heard from Steve up in Isabella, and this is his account of the 35th Christmas bird count. Like last year, the weather cooperated. There were a good number of counters, 42, and they extended a good deal of effort in pursuit of birds, including a record number of hours snowshoeing. And while we managed to match our average species tally of 22 for the count, and the number of birds tallied exceeded last year's by more than 250, our total, 895 total birds, still fell about 15% short of our count's average. There were fewer common ravens and gray jays this year, but the increase in blue jays and finches, especially common red poles and pine grosbeaks, more than compensated. In the life isn't fair category, Team Ronning saw more spruce grouse and boreal chickadees than red-breasted nuthatches. Not too many birders can say that about a day of birding. The perennial powerhouse Team Lund Grosich came out on top for the most species and individual birds, as well as crushing it in the birds per party hour category, see attached spreadsheet. Certain poor losers, read me, believe this may have had as much to do with their territory as birding acumen. Next year, to test the theory that theirs is simply a more productive territory, I will be auctioning off the rights to their territory to the highest bidder. Actually, if one parses the numbers for certain species, you can find evidence of some parts of the count circle are more productive than others. I've talked about this for common red poles before, but this species does provide a dramatic illustration of how habitat differences can dictate where certain species are found or not on the landscape. Despite more effort being expended in the northern portion of the count circle, the vast majority of common red poles were found in the southern portion. What's the difference? North of the red line, the soils are more gravelly glacial moraines, while south of the line, finer soils deposited as outwash plains predominate. The outwash plains favor tamarack, white cedar, black spruce, alder, and larger paper and yellow birch, all of which produce seeds attractive to common red poles. Nice little lesson in habitat right there from Steve. Thanks, Steve. Always good to hear from you and always good to hear about the Isabella bird count. That must be one of the most enjoyable bird counts in the state. One of these years, I'm actually going to participate with those guys if they'll have such a neophyte as me. And from our good friend Steve over in Nebish, Nebish. I'm excited to report that I saw a goshawk this morning in Nebish. I've never before positively identified one locally in all the years we've been up here, so it's the first for the neighborhood. Very cool. The bird feeder action is a little odd. We've still got a number of purple finches and goldfinches. No red poles or grosbeaks. Not what I would expect to see in January here. And then he says, have you heard anything about a winter owl migration? Maggie Carlson and I keep talking about a road trip to look for them. A couple years ago, I bookmarked a good site that gave a pretty detailed information about winter owls across northern Minnesota, but I can't seem to locate it anymore. And so I'm asking all of you to help with this, and perhaps you can maybe reply on KAXE KBXE's Facebook site if you know of a site that we can visit that will tell us where there might be an eruption of owls in northern Minnesota. We'd be interested in getting that information. So if you have that kind of information, please get in touch with us through Facebook and let us know. And speaking of Facebook, I've had a barred owl at my house all winter, and I'm sure it's a year-round resident because I hear it calling all the time, or I hear barred owls calling, and I can only assume that the one that comes to my feeder every day or every evening is probably the resident barred owl, but Diana Magner, whose name you've heard here before, is a, she's a teacher down in Hill City, second grade this year. And she and her family had a barred owl at their house. And one of her daughters got a wonderful video of the owl swooping down and smacking into the snow and eventually coming out of the snow with a small mammal that it proceeded to fly up in the tree and eat. And in the notes that accompany the piece, the video, apparently the owl was successful at least three times that they saw during the day, and that's pretty spectacular. I only wish that I could see my owl getting something to eat. I know that that he tries, and it sits in a tree right above my bird feeder and listens and watches, but so far I have not had the thrill of seeing it dive down and capture something. It must be getting something to eat because it's back every day, and without food, why, it certainly wouldn't be hanging out. Along that same line, a note this morning from our good friend Ed Dallas down in Deerwood, and Ed was peering out the window the other day, and he saw a mink kind of loping across his property, and so he had to switch windows in order to catch a look at it as it left or as it, you know, reappeared in another spot. And when he got around to the next window to look, the mink was loping out of the yard carrying a dead gray squirrel. And it said that all the other gray squirrels, and he has quite a few, were sitting up in the trees, sort of chattering and watching and probably, you know, lamenting the fact that they were down one squirrel. But Ed and I were both on the side of the mink. Mink's got to eat, too. And what would you rather have, a gray squirrel coat or a mink coat? Figure it out. So we're on the side of the mink in that one. And the mink, like the owl, needs to eat. Note on Facebook, too, of pine siskins, which I have not yet seen in northern Minnesota. Red poles and pine siskins, two common winter visitors that are pretty scarce this year. So if you are lucky enough to have them at your house, why, you know, you might want to post also on Facebook, along with the others who have, with pictures of, I saw pine siskins. I did not see a picture of the red poles yet, so I don't know if there are red poles in the area. I suspect there must be a few. And among the other birds that are pictured on Facebook this week, Joel Rosen down in on Park Lake near Mattawa, Minnesota, has a nice picture of a feeder full of pine grosbeaks and a male cardinal, and it looks like maybe a purple finch or two. Anyway, a great photo of some wonderful winter birds. You may recall last week I mentioned that there was I was waiting to hear the spring call of the chickadee. I got a number of responses on Facebook and on email, and of course Ed Dallas, who had posed the question. There it is. Hi, honey, cheeseburger. So be listening for that call, because they are going to be starting to sing that song. In fact, Tornado Bob has mentioned on his KAXE KBXE Facebook site that he has heard that call in just about every month of the year, except for maybe October and November. I usually start hearing it in December, and then this time of year it becomes more and more prevalent. I haven't heard it yet this year, and perhaps it's just that I haven't been outside enough around my feeder, but I suspect that if you are outside, you probably have heard that two-note or three-note call and are enjoying the call of the black-capped chickadee. Purple finches at my house, and white-breasted nuthatch the other morning when it was like 22 or 23 below zero. A nice clear morning. I was standing in my living room looking out at the bird feeder and watching the chickadees rush in there to grab some breakfast. And there was a white-breasted nuthatch that came, got a seed, flew up to the Norway pine that's right next to this feeder, put the seed in the crack and sort of cracked it open and ate the meat, ate the nut itself. Then instead of going back down to the feeder, it positioned itself on the sunny side of the tree. So the sun is just coming up. This is just after 8 o'clock and the sun is just starting to illuminate the area. And here's this nuthatch plastered up against the tree in the sunlight, and he's got his head tipped up and his beak is pointing like straight. He's face down and his beak is pointing out straight at the sun, and he's just sitting there sort of basking in that early morning light. I can't even imagine that it had any heat to it at all, but he recognized where the heat was going to come from, and he was ready for it when it got there. So pretty interesting. There's still a lot of American crows hanging around, and common ravens, of course, are all over the place. There have been a couple of dead deer on the highway near my house. I think one of the new residents down there is maybe feeding deer, and there are a lot of them crossing the roads in this one spot. And I guess this last weekend, maybe Friday night, I think it was, my wife said that there were two dead right in the middle of the road. And somebody must have grabbed those, because there was a third one dead in that same spot about 2 weeks ago. And the crows, ravens, and eagles were definitely dining on that. From our friend Dallas Hudson over in Akeley, he had a white-throated sparrow at his house until about Christmas time, just after Christmas, and he told me in a conversation that he hadn't seen the white-throated sparrow anymore, that it was gone. He also has a dark-eyed junco at his house, and the rest, you know, red-bellied woodpeckers, as we have at our house, and the downies and the hairies and the pileated. So there are a lot of woodpeckers around, at least at my house and at his house. We both tend to hang a deer thorax, a deer rib cage, in a tree, you know, near the house where we can keep an eye on it. And the birds really like it. I've had I had a starling that was coming to that deer carcass for several weeks by itself. And now in the last couple of days, a second starling has shown up. So there are now two starlings eating on the deer carcass in my yard. I was out skiing yesterday. I noticed the snow was littered with the seeds and bracts of the birch trees. So the birches are sending their seeds out, and perhaps not willingly, but this is the time of year when oftentimes flocks of siskins or redpolls will come in and attack the birch and tear apart the little catkins that have the seeds in them. And you'll see these little, they look like, well, a little bit like the fleur-de-lis, or a bit like not exactly a four-leaf clover, but maybe, I don't know, like that print that a duck's foot would make or something like that. And that's the bract. That's the shielding part of the seed structure that you find on paper birch. The seed itself is a very small, smaller than a pinhead dot, and it's usually surrounded by a kind of a flat wing. And so you see this little, the overall, the thing is, a little larger than a pinhead total, but almost 70% of that total area that you're looking at is the bract or the wing that sits around the seed. And you need to look carefully to see the seed in the middle of that little winged circle. So check out birch seeds on the ground. It won't be long, and the speckled alder will also be dropping their seeds. If you get down into the swampy areas, you might run into those. The other thing I ran into yesterday that was quite interesting was a porcupine has been eating on the Scots pine in my tree plantation. When we first planted our plantation, we planted two rows actually of Scots pine around the outside edge of the plantation, along the east and north sides of the plantation. And Many years ago, when they were very young, the porcupines discovered them and spent a lot of time eating the bark off of them. And I thought, well, that's a little unusual. They're mostly white pine or maple. They'll move to maple this time of year, springtime, maybe a little later on, February, March. They'll climb up in the maples and start eating on those. But the Scots pine has been one that they kind of favor. And here yesterday, there was a lot of evidence of damage to the Scots pine. I don't mind, because the Scots pine really almost has no market value. The wood itself is weak and not very suited to much of anything other than maybe some quick burning firewood. But because of the way the porcupines attack them and the resulting growth patterns that form on these things, they make these odd shapes and not at all the sort of straight bold pines that you think of when you think of Norway or white pine. These things get kind of limby and they might grow up and then sort of be stunted off and grow on a side branch, and all of that makes for great habitat for snags, for places where woodpeckers can get in and make openings, and then other birds can come along and get in there as well. So I will keep the Scots pine, and I will enjoy them as homes for a lot of other animals as they begin to decay and break away. Final note for this week, I was looking for this particular northern pin oak, which is quite large. This one is probably 8 inches in diameter at breast height, which is large for northern pin oak. They don't usually get this size. Now, this might be a cross between pin oak and red oak, but it is in the red oak family, and I believe it's pin oak mostly because of the sinuses. The deep openings within the leaves look a lot like pin oaks as opposed to red oaks. But this tree, I skied past it yesterday, and it probably had 50% of the leaves that it started off the year with. It's still quite heavily leafed, and these leaves are not getting shaken out of the tree the way the red oak in my front yard gets shaken out. The red oak in my front yard might have, 5% of the leaves that it started the year with. There's still some leaves on it, and it looks like a lot of leaves, but when you actually think about the total size of the tree and how many leaves there are remaining, it's probably 5%. It can't be 10% of the total number of leaves. But this tree, except for the very top of the tree, looked entirely leafed. It looked quite spectacularly red in that white setting that is out there right now. That's the Phenology Show for this week. As always, we encourage you to get out and look at the world you're living in, enjoy it, and remark about it. Maybe send me a note or send a note to KAXEKBXE Season Watch page on Facebook. We love to see what you're seeing.